Welcome once again to another episode of the podcast at Delphi.org. Joining me today is my usual co-host, Nick Hodges. Thanks for being
here,
Nick.
Hey. You bet.
And we're also talking with Craig Chapman, one of our software consultants.
Hello, hello.
Hello, Craig. Craig is out of Austin, Texas.
Not originally, I bet. That doesn't sound like a Texas accent.
Originally the United Kingdom, but for the time being, Texas.
Now, what is the United Kingdom? That's Britain and Wales, is that right? No.
It's England, Ireland, Scotland, and Wales. And by Ireland, I mean the northern bit.
Northern Ireland.
Yes.
The contentious one.
Yeah, yes.
Not to get into politics, sorry.
There, CPG Gray, I think it is, or I can't remember what the CP Gray or something like that has a fantastic YouTube video that explains what's the difference between the United Kingdom and England and Britain and all
Great
those
Britain and,
Great Britain. Yep.
Yeah.
The way to remember it is it's England and then Ireland, Wales, and Scotland united in their dislike of the English. So it's the United Kingdom.
Very good. Excellent. Not to get into politics.
No. Now, Nick, are you originally from Philly, Pennsylvania?
No. I consider myself a Minnesotan.
Minnesotan.
But I moved there when I was 12. But I really took to it. And I consider myself a Minnesotan. I root for all the Minnesota sports teams. I consider Minnesota my home state. My family all live there, so... My sister's the mayor of Minneapolis.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
She is. Not to get into politics, but she's pretty PO'd right now.
I think everybody's PO'd right now when we talk about politics. So that's why we're not going to have to go there. So I thought we would just talk real quick, Craig, about we just finished up our IoT boot camp and... I thought it was fantastic, a lot of fun. Did you catch any of it, Nick? I know you've been really, really busy with
I'm afraid else. I did not, was not able to catch it, so I'd love to hear about it.
I'm sure at this point, Boyan is becoming embarrassed at how many times I talk how fantastic his products are, but I was kind of new to these products, and they are fantastic products, Visuino Studio and the various lab components that he sells, definitely worth checking out. And, you know, physically building a device and attaching it to my machine was somewhat liberating as well. You break out of the software-only box into hardware. It's always a lot of fun.
Yeah. Boyan's Visuino is just like magic. Because I'd done some Arduino development before with the Arduino IDE, and you're writing in C. And no offense against C, but I don't think in C very well, and you know I can do it, but it's not my most favorite way to write code. But with Visuino, you just and it makes sense because Arduino, when you're writing code in Arduino, usually you're just like, okay, I want to read this data and put it here and send it there, and if it's this, do this. I mean, it's really typically very rudimentary, simplistic moving data around. And so Visuino is just visually, okay, I'm going to grab this pin here and connect it to this thing here, which you got a wire that you just connected there physically. It just makes sense. It's exactly what you're doing in physical wiring, except you're drawing it on the screen and you tap a button and boom, it uploads it to the Arduino and you can talk to it from your Delphi app. And it's just like magic.
So you can write Arduino applications in Delphi.
Well, you're writing the app in Visuino, which is kind of his own IDE.
Right.
But then
the language is...
Your language is all drag and drop.
Oh, I gotcha.
It's like visual live bindings, except you're binding pieces of hardware together. And then when you're done, though, you can drop down... he has a communications lab component that you can drop down and talk to that Arduino from your Delphi app. And it's really, really easy.
Sweet.
Yeah.
So you guys covered that this week?
Yes. Yeah, we started out with covering that, showing people how to build some different things on on Arduino, whether it be input sensors or output, displaying on OLED screens or lighting up LEDs or whatever it might be, and then showed how to connect all that to Delphi, and then how to connect all that to RAD server. So then we start building the stack up, and then we kind of spread the stack out and showed how to, or Craig showed this. Craig was did awesome, showed how to, if you had to use JavaScript or C#, how you could connect that through RAD server to interact with these Arduino devices, which is pretty.
RAD server is so cool. I love RAD server.
Yeah, it was pretty neat to see. You know, he's like, oh, look, now when I move this joystick, you can read it from RAD server and see where. And it's like, wow, that's just crazy that you can read a joystick via RAD server over the internet. You know, the positioning of a joystick or a button or a, you know, light up a light or whatever. Just
that's cool.
Yeah. So
I like that.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. People seemed pretty excited about it. We had partnered with Maker Fabs. They put together a little kit for us with Boyan's advice. It was about $38 kit full hardware, it was about $50 of the shipping, which is really reasonable for what you had in that kit. And it was really cool, a lot of fun. It was just neat to see all the stuff you could do with it and connect to it from Delphi. I like it because it really brings that rapid application development that Delphi spoils us with to Arduino.
Wow. That's an...
Let me jump in also because you mentioned the kit. So Boyan worked with Maker Fabs to select this kit, and some of his driving philosophies are ease of entry, low-cost entry, getting easy to assemble. So rather than do what most of the Arduino starter kits do, which is to provide you with a breadboard that you drop components into and then plug in wires to wire them up, he thought that even the breadboard is too complex. And the actual solution is that each of these boards has pins protruding from it, and he also supplies in the kit a bunch of connecting wires that can connect pin to pin directly. So this thing is like Legos. This is, you just click things together. I can't emphasize enough how much attention to detail he's put into both the hardware and the software side on this.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And we're just going to check and see how long. So the Maker Fabs deal is good for 4 more days. It's Friday right now. So 1, 2. So yeah, looks like through Valentine's Day, roughly.
And I can hardly figure out what to do with my Raspberry Pi.
Well, I think this is actually a little more useful than Raspberry Pi, because a Raspberry Pi is just another computer, really. Whereas this one, it's like, hey, you want to, have a joystick and some buttons and a number pad and light up a light? There you go. You can do all that from this. If you want to build a sensor that you could tell if your refrigerator or your freezer was getting too warm, you can have a little notification through RAD server that does that. Or Malcolm did, right? And see if your trash cans need to go out to the curb or not. That's all. You could do all that with this sort of stuff.
That's what he did, yeah. He got some interest in that, too.
Yeah, I mean, if you wanted to, you could, for example, put a GPS device and a radio together and create a telemetry tracker, something like that. Just bolt things together.
Yeah, put that telemetry tracker in a balloon and launch it up into space.
Or hook it up to your car, somebody's car, and track them around. Oh, that's illegal. Actually, I don't know if it's illegal or not, but certainly sounds illegal, isn't it?
It might be.
I like the balloon idea much better.
Well, that's something Craig does, actually. He's a weather balloon guy.
Are you a weather balloon guy?
I'm a weather balloon guy. Yeah, I was hinting. So I've used Arduino before I've used Arduino, and actually before Arduino, I used PIC chips. And the official IDE for developing software in PIC chips is also written using Delphi. So I've used these controllers to track weather balloons, transmit telemetry back to ground, and take photography from really high altitudes. So I'm talking, you can see the curvature of space type altitudes.
What altitude was that?
That was 120,000 feet, 31 kilometers up. Yeah.
Don't you have to have a license for that?
The only license that you actually need is a ham radio license to receive the telemetry data. And you do have to get permission from the FAA/air traffic control. So, obviously you can't go launching these things too near an airport, that kind of thing. So.
That's amazing.
It's a whole lot of fun. I've flown several missions, and I've had far less successful missions than I have crashed into a mountain or landed in the channel, you know.
I suppose so.
We lost one 5 miles offshore at the English Channel between Europe and England. It touched 50 meters altitude, which is approximately the sea level there, about 5 miles before making it to France. So that was one fantastic failure. It was an opportune flight. I just took the opportunity because I was visiting England again and sent the some members of the Cambridge University space flight team that I've worked with before. They volunteered to be my France recovery team and had a great day out in France, but didn't recover a balloon. So,
now, what are these balloons made out of?
They're latex helium hydrogen balloons.
Latex helium and hydrogen, huh?
Helium hydrogen. We tend to go for helium for the safety factor, but the altitude record always goes to hydrogen. It has more lift.
Yeah, they've had a few disasters with hydrogen.
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't want to recommend anybody. I don't want to violate any safety regulations or make any unsafe recommendations. But the truth is, the stoichiometry of hydrogen is such that it's actually quite difficult to ignite. If you're going to fill a thermite coated balloon with the stuff, then you might be asking for trouble. But you know, it's actually kind of difficult to light in the form that we would send it up. But unless it makes sensible sense to use a helium if you can.
Very good. So the Arduino will transmit from that distance?
Basically we use any GPS module will do. They pretty much all send data in a format called NMEA. It's a maritime format for the GPS. And that goes down your bus to the Arduino chip. And then my software translates that data into APRS packets, which is amateur packet radio system, I think.
Okay.
And then we transmit that using a radio transmitter module, which is, I mean, really not very powerful, somewhere between 50 and 300 milliwatts of output. But direct line of sight with a high gain antenna, you will be able to pick that up. I mean, my first balloon was 50 milliwatt transmitter, RTTY data in the United Kingdom, and I was using a regular WIP antenna, receiving it just fine all the way up and all the way back down. So,
wow, okay.
Yeah, it was only when it reached ground level and trees and things got in the way that I had to pick out the directional antenna and go find it.
Sure, okay.
Now, do you send the pictures down via telemetry as well, or just the location type stuff?
Unfortunately, I don't send the pictures. The technology certainly exists. The regulations don't permit its use.
Oh, really?
Essentially, yeah. So,
too much data, probably.
It's too much. Well, yeah, bandwidth is the biggest concern over the amateur bands because you would have to consume a lot of the licensed amateur bands to send the visual data. Baud rate isn't really an issue if you have access to the right frequencies, but those frequencies are off license. They're outside of the license for amateur use. And the other thing that you can't use is GSM. A lot of people, I've seen projects where people send cell phones into space. The catch is, of course, if you've ever been on an aircraft and they tell you to turn the GSM off on your phone, it's for regulatory reasons, far more so than any actual danger concerns for the aircraft.
Yeah, you must be able to contact quite a few cell towers from 120,000 feet.
That's right. Now, obviously, it wouldn't interfere with them, but the reason for the regulation is the fear that we might interfere with other communications.
Yeah. So, have you sent any Delphi code up yet?
I wish I had. I haven't yet. I may fly a Pi when we have the Linux support in, and I tweak it to send out to Pi. But so far, I've sent Arduinos and PIX, which there isn't a Pascal compiler for them. There is, but it's not a very commonly used or well supported compiler.
Got it. So you're kind of a Linux guy then?
I'm equally comfortable in Linux and Windows.
Because I've been doing Linux and I'm not very comfortable at all.
Right. It's so I got into Linux back when it used to be that the attitude around Linux, certainly within the Linux community, was at one time that you should be wearing a white lab coat in order to be able to use Linux. And yeah. Went away as new distros came along that had, you know, better driver support, easier installers, and all that kind of stuff, and even started launching desktop alternatives to Windows and so on. But I've been using Linux for that long for various projects. I would not say that I'm an expert. I'm not certified by anyone. But, yeah, I've been using it a long time. I'm very comfortable with it now. In fact, I prefer it in many cases to Windows, particularly for scripting. So.
Yeah, I'm hearkening back to my Kylix days when I was working on the Linux stuff this week. I'm going to Japan to demo our Linux stuff, so I have to prepare for that. And it's been fun. I'm enjoying it. I just have a lot to learn in the next month.
Well, if I can help you with anything.
Well, you already have. Your blog post was superb.
Excellent. I'm glad that's useful.
Very useful. I found it astonishingly useful. And I think you broke the record for screenshots in a blog.
Yeah, that wasn't my intention when I started, and about halfway through I thought, I might as well keep going. So.
There's a lot of screenshots in that blog post. And that's at chapmanworld.com, right?
Chapmanworld.com, yeah. Typically, I would have turned that into a video post. Unfortunately, the amount of time I can spend making video recordings is limited because I work in a busy sales office and
yes.
Very noisy. So I have to do work from home and come back to my home studio office to record that kind of stuff. So hence the screenshots rather than video.
Well, it was very nice and very helpful. Got me going, and on the Linux side in particular, knowing how to update and refresh everything. And I'm using VirtualBox, which is really cool. And then I'm SSLing into the VirtualBox, which is even cooler. So it's headless. And then I just use Windows to SSL into it, and I can communicate with it that way. And Linux at the command line is challenging. There's no doubt about it. Particularly for file manipulation and things like that. So I've been enjoying that, learning that, relearning that. I was pretty reasonably competent when I was doing the Kylix stuff, but that was over 10 years ago now.
Wow. It's hard to believe it was that long ago.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? I mean, it was before I came on board the first time in Embarcadero or in Borland then in 2006. So it was before that, yeah. It was in the 2000s, early 2000s.
Yeah, well, that, with 10 years, I think I've looked away from my IDE 4 times in that time. So.
Oh yeah. Okay.
I mean, you close your eyes, go to sleep, or something like that, or how? Why would you look away from your IDE?
Oh no, I don't look away from it when I sleep.
Okay, good.
Good to know, man.
Actually, if you've ever seen my code base, you'd know that I was probably asleep when I was writing it. So.
Oh, well. So what advice do you have for people who are looking to get into Linux via Delphi?
Wait till we release it. But
that's good advice, yeah.
Aside from that, so... learn those shell instructions. Don't be one of these people that demands a UI, because it's much more flexible. Sure, it's a little bit of a learning curve at first, but when you get knowledgeable with it, it's very, very flexible. And the other thing I would say is, so there's an awful lot of documentation online, and what you need to be looking at first and foremost is glib or libc. Because this is the basic runtime library that you bind to get memory management, input, output, and all that kind of stuff. But familiarizing yourself with it puts you in a great place to do things like there's a method called fork, which will take an application and split it into two different apps. And that is, yeah, so that's effectively the way that Linux creates a what they call a daemon, which is the equivalent of a Windows service. What they do is start the app at the command line, and then the app calls fork, and depending on which, so it splits the app, it creates two instances, and the app can then tell which of those two instances it is. If it's the instance that was originally launched from the command line, then you simply gracefully exit that version. If it's the second copy of the process, then you shut down the input-output streams, and you now have a service. So you wouldn't know that unless you familiarize yourself with libc. And I don't think we're going to have a service project option out of the box with the next release. So if you want to know how to make services with Delphi before it's officially a project type, go look at libc stuff. And libc will give you a whole bunch of other stuff as well. So
tell us a little bit about, I mean, we all know, but the three of us know, but just be good to talk about it a little bit. Tell us a little bit about what you're going to be able to do with Delphi for Linux.
Well, the thing I'm most excited about is service-oriented architecture.
RAD server?
RAD server, not just RAD server, but also things like Apache web modules for that kind of thing. Let me dodge your question for a moment and quickly talk about RAD server and web broker technologies. So RAD server is an amazing technology. We just did a boot camp on it, and it's very, very worth knowing. But it's also worth being aware of web broker being in the product, because while web broker doesn't come with as many turnkey components added in, they're really targeted at the enterprise corporate user. What web broker will let you do is build server-side services, and it does work so far on the beta. It does work under Linux as well, so very worth looking at. So that's what I'm looking at doing, is service-oriented architectures. And I don't know how much I want to plug somebody else's service here, but there's a website called Linode, which allows you to bring up virtual Linux servers in the cloud. It has an API. You can create and drop servers from an API as much as you need to. It's incredibly reasonably priced with prorated pricing. So if I need a development server for a day, I can bring up a Linode for a day and only pay for that day. When I close it, I'll get the rest of the month's service fee back. So that's a great place to start experimenting with hosted service applications.
Oh, this is very cool. That's not very cool.
I've loved Linode for its simplicity, for ease of use, and I've already tested. I can deploy RAD server applications out to Linode using the PA server. So
nice.
Yeah, it's worth doing. And I keep plugging myself here, but again, at my blog, I wrote a script called Broly, Brolly. If you search for that on my blog, it is an initialization script for Linux, and it's designed. I actually built it on a Linode. It'll turn your Linode into a web server. It enables certain security features. It prepares all the config for you. So it'll even build a backup schedule for your config. So
that sounds cool. That's on your blog?
That's on my blog. It's if you search Broly, I can dig out a link for you.
I found it.
Excellent. So yeah, it does a bunch of things, but basically it gives you a command line level menu. So you start Broly up, it'll download all of its external dependencies, and then it'll give you a menu and say, do you want to install or remove software? So you can go into that and you can say, okay, install the firewall, for example. It'll install the firewall package, and then it'll give you the option to open and close various ports on the firewall. Then you can go in and say, well, actually, I'd like to install a subversion repository, and it'll install subversion for you and give you the option to set up and remove user accounts. It'll also build a web server, and it then offers what I call Broly backup, which is the configuration and data from all of those services can be bundled into a tar file and uploaded via FTP or SFTP to a...
So you really are a Linux geek, I can see.
building that script was for the benefit of another video series that I was doing. So I've been using those scripts as stack scripts for years, and I wanted to not have to educate people on how to administer a Linux server in order to provide this other series that I was doing.
Sure.
So a consumable script. So.
Very nice.
Nice.
There's a bit of news that came out recently. We're going to shift gears here.
Yeah.
I think we talked about Tyobi Index in our first episode or so, and a few weeks ago. And just today, they've updated it, and it's Delphi's up to in the top 10.
Woohoo!
Delphi's back to the top 10.
Yes, back to the top 10.
Yes.
Where it should be. Yes, it's number 9 with a bullet.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
So that's excellent.
Did you see the blog post I did on the Tyobi Index a little while back?
Yes. That's right. That's right. And you did a blog post and you wrote them and got them to reclassify the way Delphi was classified. That's right.
That's right. We were down at, very unfairly, we were down somewhere between 16 and 20. The reason were they weren't attributing everything that really belongs in the Delphi searches to Delphi.
Including Object Pascal, the phrase Object Pascal.
Exactly, Object Pascal. And in fact, just the word Pascal. If you search the web today for the word Pascal, you will not find original classic Pascal anymore. You'll find maybe one link in a million. What it actually refers to is Object Pascal all the time. And that's the issue that I took, the way that they were doing the index. So we negotiated on that.
That's right. I remember that. It was interesting, though. I was looking at the Tyobi Index. I scrolled down to the chart that shows the top 10. And if you look at it, you can see Delphi is the red line towards the bottom, but it's trending up, where a lot of the other ones are trending down. If you look at Java and C, C has a really big downward trend. Java was going up, but now it's going down. So it's interesting to see that the Java and C have been ruling the top for a long time, but they are definitely trending down right now.
That's interesting.
There is another way to look at the Tyobi Index data, which I also blogged about a while back, but something to keep in mind. The source of this data is basically from statistics taken from Google, Bing, Yahoo, Wikipedia, Amazon, YouTube, and so on, right? So these are search index results. And what is the most common time for you to go search for something related to your language? It's usually when you're having a problem. Right?
Right.
Got some problem, I'm going to go Google and find out what's going on. So actually, the way I look at the first four or five entries on the Tyobi Index is, these are the languages which people are most frustrated with right now. And I think Delphi being at number 10 is pretty nicely placed, actually.
Good point. That is a good point. I mean, the Tyobi Index has been very controversial in the community. I just like that it measures something. I'm not 100% clear on what it measures, but it measures something, and it measures it consistently over time, and Delphi has continued to hang in there over the years and to the point where it's in the top 10 now. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't surprise me. I mean, we've been seeing, certainly talking through the North American sales channel, we've been seeing an uptick in users and an uptick in activity in the community. Just very recently, I was invited out to the to one of the user groups out in California, and the main reason for that was, hey, we've noticed that the community is really active again, and we'd like to know what's new. So yeah, it's all good stuff happening.
That's great. Yeah, you did go out to California, didn't you? That's right.
I have a regret regarding my trip, and the regret has nothing to do with the user group, who were very welcoming and fantastic, engaging crowd, really enjoyed being there. My regret is that I booked my flights to fly in, do the presentation, and fly back out again. And that's my first time in California. I could have stayed for a while.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah, California is a great place to visit. Living there is a little more challenging, but
Yeah, that would be
financially, but it's a beautiful, beautiful state. I spent quite a bit of my life living there, which is kind of surprising, both between the military and being a Borland / Cogir / Embarcadero person.
So there's a couple of blog posts here I was going to share. Zarko Gajek, I'm probably pronouncing his name wrong. He used to be the guy that ran the about Delphi programming about site. He has a blog post on enabling Delphi applications to support high DPI and 4K screen resolutions, which I got to say 4K screen resolutions is kind of crazy, but apparently that's the norm now.
Yeah, 4K. Windows on 4K, you can hardly read the menus.
We just have to up pretty the amazing. Font. You have to up the font size, which is the idea, though. So. But yeah.
I guess, yeah.
Now they have like 6K and 8K monitors you're looking at. It's just crazy.
Ugh, good grief.
Although I did get a 4K TV for Christmas, so I can't complain.
There you go. Hook it up to your computer.
That would be awesome.
There does actually appear to be a limitation that I've come across with the 4K monitors in Windows as well. So I use a 4K laptop, 4K screen on my laptop at work, and there's a wizard. So you go through the wizard and say, okay, I want my icons this size and my text this size, and it sets it all up nice for you. And then you plug in an external monitor, which is not a 4K monitor.
all hell breaks loose.
Yep, beware of trying to run Windows on multiple resolutions with that greater gap between them. So.
Very good.
So another tech tip here. Yuve Rabe, R-A-B-B-E, I'm terrible pronouncing names, I apologize. He has a blog post on Dataset Enumerator Reloaded, looking at the enumerating datasets, which is pretty cool. I know it's interesting to talk with Boyan. He says that he's trying to, with a lot of stuff he does, he wants to get people out of the mindset that Delphi is just a data manipulation programming language, which is true, because Delphi is a truly general purpose programming tool that's great for all sorts of things.
Absolutely.
But yeah, is absolutely. Fantastic for working with databases. It's just crazy how good it is for that.
I claim FireDAG is the world's best data access component set.
FireDAG is amazing. I love FireDAG.
FireDAG, and I defy you to find a better one.
I know I've talked to people that have suggested some components have certain features FireDAG doesn't have, but overall, I still like FireDAG better.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, that's cool. Enumerating over data sets is cool.
Yeah.
I like it.
Because it's certainly something you end up doing a lot. I know that... I'm not going to go there. I was going to say I've worked with Delphi has really spoiled me over the years, and I've gone and used other development tools, and I'm not going to talk about which one's which, and I've heard fantastic things. Oh my goodness, it makes this so easy. And I get there and start using it. I'm like, my goodness, this is so hard. And I realize they're saying it's easy compared to what they used to use, which wasn't Delphi, and I'm used to use Delphi and using it, and I'm like, oh, this is not very good. But
yeah, well. What do they know?
You know, I've done so the same thing. I like to not. I like to try and follow the mantra of I don't want to box myself into one tool. The problem is that Delphi is such a fantastic tool that I just end up in it all the time. But I go and try another tool, and everybody in the community is raving about how easy something is to do with this tool. So I go and look at it. And when I look at it, usually what I find is not that it's necessarily harder than doing it in Delphi, but, hey, wait a minute, Delphi's had this for 10 years. Why are you raving about this?
Yeah, I remember when C# came out and they had these magical things called properties.
Oh, my goodness.
Delegates being, what, you mean event-based programming? Is that new to you guys? Because, of course, in C++, you had these things called callbacks. Which were incredibly, to my opinion at least, incredibly ugly syntax, which were effectively events. I mean, that's what an event is, right? A callback handle. But yeah, in C++, it just looked so difficult to do. That when I remember talking with a development team I was working with and saying, well, just create a callback. And I'm like, well, how do I do that? I just took for granted Delphi does that for you, you know?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. all done automatically without thinking about it.
Yeah, and even when it's not automatic, the syntax is so beautifully graceful to do things like that. I mean, any time we've ever added something to the syntax, you look at the extension and think, well, this extension just logically makes sense. And then you go and look at the syntax of other languages and you realize we are really spoiled in Pascal.
Indeed, we really are.
One thing that amused me actually on just syntax, I'm a big nerd about syntax. I've been writing parsers for a while. All of these things are hobbies and interests of mine.
Sure.
The first time I opened up C#, I wrote a case statement, so the equivalent of a switch statement. And as I'm writing it, I realize that the code is falling through from one case to the next, which is the default behavior in C++. And I realize this because the compiler will not allow you to omit the break instruction in C#. You have to have it there. It's required. You can't fall through from one case to another. The compiler doesn't support that feature, and yet you must have the break keyword. And I was sitting there thinking, well, why don't you just omit that break keyword? Surely that's just syntactic sugar. You don't need it. And then I realized it's because they're attracting people from the C++ world who have gotten into the habit of using break. So you've actually got this vestige of C++ in C#, and of course it's one of hundreds of vestiges of...
Yeah, interesting. Interesting.
Well, we're coming up at the half an hour in here, so real quick, anybody have any other tips or news they want to share before we wrap it up?
I'm good, Jim.
All right. Craig, anything you want to add besides how awesome Boyan's components are?
So obviously there's a couple of things that have happened that may not be entirely new news, recently Microsoft endorsing Delphi for its being the first IDE, or RAD Studio rather, being the first IDE to support the Centennial Bridge. So anyone who's not aware of that now, it's been around for a whole month. What are you doing? We're way ahead of you. So yeah, that you can now upload your native applications into the Centennial Bridge, or rather the Windows App Store. So there is that. And as of today, we entered beta 2 on the new release. So anybody who's not on the beta program, if you want to know what's coming, go get on the beta program.
You want to be ready. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of exciting stuff. Very true. All right. Well, fantastic. Thank you, Craig and Nick, for joining us today.
Jim.
Yeah. And we'll see everyone next time. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks, guys.